This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
I stayed and I cried. You look at me, you check my eyes. They're crystal clear, are you surprised?
Kids, it's not polite to talk about religion, sex, and politics at the dinner table, but at the open table, nothing is off limits.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the open table here on Joy 94.9. You've just been listening to the CBA, a winning game on with Jax. I'm Craig Brown. I'm hosting you here at the open table where we're hoping to have important conversations with interesting people. And joining me for the first time in 2026 after he served a week's suspension last week is Ethan Kyoto Hall. Welcome
back. Hello. It's good to be back. Feels so weird not being on for like multiple months.
Yeah. It's been a while. It has been a while because
November.
You were doing all the replays over the summer. So you were sort of keeping us
going,
still present for most of those weeks.
Most of those weeks.
Yep. It was good. We, of course, love to have you contributing to us. So please text us on 0427569949 because it's not the open table without having people at the table. Of course, we come to you from the lands of the traditional custodians of the Kulin Nations and St Kilda here in Naarm, and we pay our respects to their elders past and present and to our rainbow mob. We're here to talk about important topics like sex, spirituality, family, identity, entertainment, politics, sport, and health. And if you've missed some of the previous episodes, you can listen to them wherever you get your podcasts from, including joy.org.au at the open table, / the open table. Gee, Ethan, you missed your cue. When people text in, what else
well,
do they do?
Well, they could also email on air at joy.org.au, but you go so fast, you start doing the acknowledgement. I'm not going to interrupt that.
No, was a test.
Yeah.
Thank you for passing that. Inclusive. Our special guest at the open table tonight is AFLW player Tilly Lucas-Rod, who has played for Carlton, which I really struggle to say out loud. But that's okay. St Kilda, the Mighty Mighty Hawks, where they also captained, and from this year will be based in Sydney and playing for Greater Western Sydney. Tilly, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, absolutely. Our pleasure. As we always say, it's not really much of a show unless we have guests.
Well, so you two have it handled already.
Oh, no.
We really do not.
We really do not.
Thank you so much for coming.
We had a guest turn up 10 minutes late, and our podcaster cut everything we said in that 10 minutes, so it did not go well. So
hopefully this one's better.
No, this is good because you're here. So we're just going to have some rapid-fire questions to start us off with. Where do you identify on the queer spectrum?
I would say that I'm queer. I love that term. Yeah. And I'm also non-binary. Yeah. So that'd probably be my two.
Queer, non-binary. We will come back to that. Where did you grow up?
Inner city Melbourne. So I was born in Richmond and always lived around no more than 15 minutes out of the city.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I know. I love the city.
Sydney's going to be
a change. Yeah. Well, the furthest I've lived is in Camberwell. So moving to Bondi, where I'm going to be living in Sydney.
The furthest you've lived is Camberwell?
Yeah.
Okay. You are an inner city person.
I know. At least Sydney's very city, right? I'm going to be living in Bondi. Oh, yeah. So
absolutely.
Just city with beach, which is nice.
And what's your passion?
Well, obviously sport, being a professional athlete for 10 years, sport. Yeah. And then I'm also a teacher. So I love, I guess, connecting with people and helping people grow. I think that's a big passion of mine.
Yeah. What do you teach?
PE in health at a high school. I teach at the moment year 7 to 10 PE health. Yeah.
How long have you been doing that?
So I started at my school about 9 years ago and was a teacher's aide, and I've been teaching for 4 years. So yeah, it's a long time at the school.
Okay. Okay. So in the inner suburbs of Melbourne, when did you first start playing Australian rules?
Yeah, so I was pretty lucky. I was a generation where youth girls football had just started. So I was 4, actually, when I started playing footy. I had an older brother that's 3 years older. So he was playing. We grew up in Richmond and the local footy club was across the road. So I went down to Auskick at age 4, which is probably not many people back then did it. I was the only girl at the time in the whole competition. And I played juniors with the boys up until I was maybe 12 or 13 when you had to transfer. And then I went to youth girls. And followed the pathway there. So, yeah, I've played all my life.
Okay, so there was actually some pathways established by that stage, was it?
Yeah. So I think there was someone called Penny Cooler-Reed. She was like a pioneer back in those days, and she kind of helped establish that girls could play until 13, and then was one of the first people that helped set up a youth girls competition, which was under 18. So it was still a big jump, being like 12 and then going to play with 18-year-olds was, I was a bit nervous.
Wow.
Yeah.
That would be scary.
Yeah. I think I was in year 7 and I was playing against year 12. So imagine, it was a strange experience. But I love footy and my parents were fully supportive. My siblings were supportive. So I kind of didn't think anything else. I was like, yep, love footy. I'm going to do it.
And I guess it helped that you're pretty good at it.
Yeah, I guess so. I think in the boys, I was always one of the better players. I wasn't probably the best, but I was one of the better players. So I guess that helps. Yeah.
Did you ever think that you would play at the level that you're at now when you were sort of growing up?
Yeah, no. I was talking to a friend about this the other day and I was like, I actually thought that I'd just play in the men's competition. I thought that because I never saw other girls playing. So I never thought AFLW would exist. So I just thought that I would jump in and one day that all genders would play together in the men's competition. And that's kind of, and I went for Melbourne. So I was like, yep, I'm going to
play for
the Demons one day in the men's competition. And it wasn't, luckily enough, when I was maybe 16 was the first talks of an AFLW competition. Okay. So I was right at the cusp of, I guess I could start applying myself at that age, knowing that it was going to come in, 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. So did you run into any barriers to playing?
I think the big one was that jump in age. And so a lot of people, because at the time I was playing for Victoria and underage football in the girls competitions, and a lot of people had dropped off because of that, I guess, when you're 12 and then you have to go and play under 18s. But other than that, I was really fortunate that there was all the barriers, I guess, the pioneers before me had kind of smashed down and, broken the walls down for me. So I was pretty lucky that when I transitioned out of underage football, I went into women's football and played at St Kilda Sharks, and there was a fully fledged program. And then I was just really fortunate.
Do you talk to younger girls and women who are playing, and are you able to reflect back to them the sort of the changes that you've seen happen?
Yeah, definitely. I have a niece that's 17 now. So she plays up in Sydney.
Yep.
So I get to, I guess, live and breathe her football and see the pathway that she's had. And it's so interesting talking to them now, I guess, from Auskick. There's all girls Auskick. So you can play just all girls football right through the pathway.
Yeah.
So I do talk to them and I talk to my niece about, I guess, how incredible it is that now there's pathways all across the country.
Yeah. So when did you decide that football was going to be the thing that, one of the things that you're going to do?
As I said, from a young age, I thought I would just play professionally. And then when you grow out of those kid-like dreams, I realized that wasn't going to happen. And then, yeah, when I was probably 16, 17, they announced it'd be an AFLW competition. And because I was playing at a high level, I probably thought, oh, maybe that'll happen for me. And then I was lucky enough, I think I got drafted at 19 or 20. So I never really thought of anything else. I was like, okay, well, when that competition starts, I'll play in that. But it was hard in the first few years. You know, our salaries were really low. So I didn't think it would ever be to the level it is now, where it is like a full-time professional career.
Yeah, it's just come such a long way, hasn't
it?
And do you see that with the players who are coming through now?
Oh, yeah. So when I started, like I say to them, like when I first started, we were on $8,000. You lost some of it to tax and you had to have private health insurance, which cost you $2,500. So you're probably getting paid $5,000 and because it was on TV and on the national stage, you're expected to be a full-time professional athlete and produce that product. And now the kids coming through, as I said, have had an amazing pathway, but also they're coming into a career that pays them above minimum wage and they're able to focus their attention on just being athletes. So, I often share that story and talk to them about, how lucky they are, but also, like, we still have a way to come as well.
Yeah, definitely. Look, we're going to go to a song and then have a little bit of a break. It's The Giver by Chapel Roan. Can you tell us why you've got this one?
Oh, I just think it's a fun song.
Yeah.
I love it when it comes out, when it's on the radio. Chapel Roan's playing at Laneway on Friday night, so I'm excited to go to that.
You're going?
Yeah, amazing artist and amazing song.
Yeah. Well, listen, we've got we're talking to Tilly Lucas Rod here on The Open Table, and we've got Chapel Roan, The Giver.
This is The Open Table, where nothing is off the table.
And you're back on The Open Table. I'm Craig Brown with Ethan Kyoto Hall and Tilly Lucas Rod. And I've just worked out that I'm the only one speaking into a microphone today that has no hyphenated name.
Yeah.
So we know what that means, don't we?
Embarrassing for you.
It's embarrassing for me. We did workshop this once and it would be.
What did we come up with?
Craig Sivan Brown, I think we came up with was. Because, yeah, Troy was.
It's odd that this has happened twice.
It is odd, isn't it? Well, if you're used to odd, welcome back to The Open Table. We're here for episode 2 of 2026 and talking to AFLW footballer Tilly Lucas Rod, who was telling us about, prior to the break, about how things have changed. I guess what doesn't change is that feeling a player has when they run out at this level for the first time. What was your first time at AFLW like?
Oh, well, the first game. So I was at Carlton. I got drafted there.
Sorry.
No, I love the club. It gave me my first opportunity. I got to play in the very first AFLW game. So it was Carlton Collingwood Icon Park.
That is extraordinary. So like the two most iconic Victorian clubs and you're playing in that game.
Yeah. It was 26,000. It was a lockout.
Yeah.
People trying to climb fences to get in. I guess at the time we didn't realize how significant it was. Mm. We went from playing like local footy to that. And so you kind of just, I guess, rolling along with it and you think, oh, yeah, it's a footy game. And it wasn't until we ran out and saw the crowd and, there's stories about how people were crying in the stands, especially women that had pioneered the game. And this was such a monumental change, I guess, in Australian sport, but Australian culture more broadly. So for me, it was just like an exciting game. And I was, really nervous and the same feelings I get now probably. But, the historical significance only kind of weighs in now.
Yeah. To be able to say that you played in the first AFLW game, and it's just come so far.
Mm.
I mean, was there any concern prior to that first game, how many people would be there, or did you know it was a sellout early on?
No, so I think we thought maybe 10 to 15.
Okay.
Yeah. I can't remember exactly, but it was probably before there was huge ticketing and it was just like walk in. So yeah. I think they predicted 10 to 15. 26,000 was not what was expected.
Who won that game?
We did.
You did?
Did we?
I don't know. That was a genuine open question.
I think so. I think Carlton won. Let's go with it. Yeah. We didn't kick the first goal because I know Jasmine Garner, who is an incredible player, kicked the first goal, but I do think we came back and won it. We'll go with that.
There you go. I think it's a good story.
Yeah.
Let's stick with that. And so if we can switch to sort of, that's pretty personal. Mm. I mean, your debut game. On The Open Table, we talk with a lot of queer people. And when did you realise you weren't straight?
So I had my first partner when I was probably 15 or 16.
Okay.
And so I played cricket as well as football growing up, so I met her through cricket. But it was kind of the thing where you're like obsessed with one another and you don't really know what's going on, and then it becomes more than a friendship at some point.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that was at about 15 or 16, but I was like terrified.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Had you spoken it out loud at that point to anyone or?
No. So it was just between her and I, and I think it took me a few months before I told my – I remember telling my mum first.
Okay.
But I had to text my mum because I was so scared of her, what her reaction would be.
Right.
Yeah.
And how did that go?
It was fine. My mum like – my mum had like queer friends growing up. One of her best friends, it was a lesbian, so I knew that she'd be accepting, but you have – you play it out in your head. You think it's going to be this thing where the whole world stops and everyone's going to hate you.
Yes.
And that's the experience I had, yeah.
I think that is such a common experience, is that you just project the worst case scenario on telling people.
Yeah, and I had definitely had that. And I had that when I told my mom, and then my dad found out, and my brother and sister. And I didn't. I don't even think I told my friends at school or in my sporting teams for another year or two.
Okay.
Because I just kept having that same fear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you had a rolling procession of coming out.
Yes, yes, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, because that's the way it is, isn't it? Every sort of new environment you get into, if you're going to be in there for a while, it comes up, doesn't
it? Yeah, and especially like social media was big, but not how it is now.
No.
So there was no like platform to be like, this is who I am. So yeah, it was every new environment you stepped into or re-entered, it was another coming out. So it was a long probably year or two of coming out over and over again.
Yeah. And what was, in a sporting context, was there any issue with that or?
Yeah, so I was playing junior level sport at the time, but it was quite the opposite. I think that's where I met community and met queer people and I guess found my support and my network. But as I said, even with that, I guess that's such a positive environment, I still felt a sense of shame and fear about coming out. But I think sport for me was always such a welcoming space. When I was probably similar age, I was playing senior women's cricket and I saw queer people, queer families and had amazing role models around me. So sport was always such a welcoming space for me.
And do you think being in inner Melbourne helped as
well? Oh, definitely.
Well?
Yeah, definitely.
Because, you know, we'll sometimes talk to people who come from rural areas, and not all rural areas are the same, but it could be a bit harder to see the role models.
Mm. And I think I was really fortunate because if it wasn't for sport and having those environments, I probably wouldn't have had many role models around me.
Yeah.
But I was really lucky that I played sport and probably did so in an environment in inner city Melbourne.
It's such an interesting story, Tilly, because a lot of people will go, sport is the inhibitor for me coming out and finding myself, whereas it seems for you it was the opposite of that.
Yeah, I think that something about, I guess, women's football that I've always found and women's cricket as well was that the pillars and foundations of it, it was built by queer people and it was always such a safe and welcoming space. Mm. And that was the foundations of the community level sport for those two that I experienced. So, yeah, it is interesting because I guess especially for men, it's often the opposite.
Well, I think so. We'll get onto that in a minute too. But the AFLW just always from the outside appears to be a very accepting of our community. Like there's not just one pride round. It's over 2 weeks and all that sort of thing. And there's lots of just acceptance from a public point of view. So has that been your experience with the AFLW as well?
Yeah, definitely. I think that, as I said, when the game was growing from community football to this professional level, a lot of the same people in administration and players kind of took that on and grew with the game. So I guess the foundations were that it was a welcoming, safe space.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of transcended into as the game's gotten more professional. It is such a welcoming environment. But I do have to say as well, probably the reason I had such a positive experience, I was at like all women clubs and all female clubs when I was playing sport, those, you know, senior level sports.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And has there, like, I know some of the AFLW players have copped some abuse and some negative stuff. I mean, has that been anything directed at you as well? Or?
Oh, yeah, definitely from, like, fans and things. I think the majority of fans are really welcoming, but especially when I had some public conversations about non-binary or top surgery, definitely got some.
So it ramped up then, did it?
Oh, yeah, and, it was when my story was posted on channels that were outside of AFLW, where the fans were and was – especially like Twitter and Facebook, some horrible things.
Twitter and Facebook just seems to be the place where angry old men.
Yeah, yeah. And people constantly over and over again. I have this one guy on Twitter that always just tweets about me and always posts a screenshot of my top surgery over and over again.
Oh, my goodness.
To reply to any account.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know if he still does it, but he did it for a few months there.
So it's kind of like a that's an obsessive thing.
Yeah. And he would reply to he'd do it for any about replying to any AFLW channel about anything they commented on. He'd just reply. It was, yeah.
That's he needs to get a better hobby.
Yeah, yeah, I know. Than obsessing over me. Yeah.
I mean, like, not to put obsessing over you down, but yeah, I think you've got to do it in a sort of like a respectful way.
Yeah, there's far more interesting things. Yeah.
Absolutely. So speaking of men and angry men occasionally, what do you reckon needs to change? Because I think the AFLW seems like it had a queer sort of layer to it right from the very beginning. Mm. Whereas the AFL is kind of struggling now with that. What do you think needs to change?
Yes, I think it's hard when you're on the outside.
Yeah.
But like when I have interactions with, say, men's players, they're all lovely. Mm. But I think something we have across all of society is it's often there's nice guys, but in a group. And when things go wrong or people say something that's offensive, it's like a pack mentality and it's hard to call someone out. And so I think it starts with that, like educating about language, educating on how to call someone out, and providing education on why these things are harmful. These are jokes that these men and boys have probably used their whole lives and providing education on why it's harmful. And then, how to not be a bystander, because it's hard when they get in a group to, I guess, the most of them just sit back and let it happen. And I think like that's a simple thing at a player level. And then there's lots of changes probably at administration level. And lots of education that needs to be done to make it a safer and more welcoming space.
Yeah, we might come back to this after the next song, which is, again, one that you've chosen for us. And if I can get my run sheet out from in front of me, or even just read the screen, Craig, there you go. Post-Sex Clarity by Lolly Young. Why have we chosen this one?
I really love this song. So this is like, I remember when I first found it, I think I listened to it for like a week straight. This is the only song I listened to.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So have you got one of those songs at the moment?
No, not at the moment. Okay. But
Mine's Where Is My Husband.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
that's a good one.
So this one for you was
like a week straight.
Week straight.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good. Do you ever get scared when you do that you're going to lose the passion for the song?
Absolutely. Because then I go off it for a few months and I come back around. Yeah, it's a full circle.
Yeah. All right. Well, you are listening to Tilly Lucas Rod here on The Open Table with myself, Craig Brown, and Ethan Kyoto Hall. Or I'm just going to call him Ethan Kyoto because I don't think he should be hyphenated at this particular point in time, just to make me feel a bit better about myself. We're going to listen to Lolly Young and we'll be back after the break to keep talking to Tilly.
Sex, politics, and religion. It's all laid out on The Open Table here on Joy.
Sorry, just got into cup sport again, you know.
Not again, Craig. I do. I know. Not again, like Craig.
Tilly on our second show, I think.
It was pretty early.
It was very inexperienced at this. Yeah. You're listening to The Open Table, by the way. I'm Craig Brown, Ethan Kyoto Hall, Tilly Lucas Rod.
Very professional.
Now, I really like cup sport, and so that's our intro. Mm. And so I was just listening to it on our second show.
You get lost in it.
And I got lost in it. Yeah. And it was just like Ethan had to do the intro, you know, so there was some union regulations about that because panelists can't do that.
That's
so
true.
And it is true.
It's true. Like we don't get an award one day.
We were picketed that week. You had to cross the picket lines to get into the studio. Lots of angry presenters and hosts going, what were you doing? Well, we weren't talking about any of this rubbish before the break. We were talking about AFLW coming out in the welcoming environment of women's sport, but we also touched on some of the harder stuff. And you were saying in the men's game, AFLWM. well, that's what you can call it.
Yeah, change it.
Yeah, change it. So Mitch Brown, who's going to be on the show later on this year, came out publicly last year. Was that? What sort of ripple? I wouldn't think it had a ripple effect in AFLW, but what was that like to see?
Yeah, it was incredible. I think, good on him for coming out. I think I can't understand the experiences he would have had as an AFL men's player. So I'm sure it was really hard. But, I remember messaging him and just being like, this is going to change lots of people's lives that you don't know and you probably will never hear from, but it's going to have such a an impact and a ripple effect, as you said. And I remember I remember Hawthorn, there was a few conversations and, yeah, they made the men's team watch the coming out video.
Oh, really?
And the podcast. I'm not sure. I don't know the reaction, but, yeah, they thought it was really important from a club's perspective if they did that. Yeah.
That's great to hear. As a Hawthorn supporter, I'm really rapt to hear that.
Yeah, and I think it made important conversations happen.
Yeah.
As I said, I wasn't privy to them, but, yeah, I think it's really good that they made the men's team watch it.
Because it's interesting. I have a theory, and you can tell me if I'm crazy or not. But I reckon there's got to be a group of current players that have to come out at the same time for it to really happen in the AFL men's.
Yeah. That was whenever I get asked, and because I don't like to comment too much because I'm not in the environment, but that is my solution.
Yeah.
And the way it could, I guess, help them is to have a group, because coming out as a current player by yourself, I imagine not the reaction internally, but from fans and media would be overwhelming and too much. So I think that, as you said, safety in numbers,
hopefully. I think so, yeah. And you were saying before that once you came out as non-binary, we'll talk about that in a moment, and, the top surgery got, was splashed across the Herald Sun and places like that. So you sort of went outside of the safe, fan base that just goes, that's great, fantastic.
Yeah.
That's exactly what's going to be facing whoever comes out first as an AFL men's player, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think being an AFLW player, I was lucky. Mainstream media didn't even jump on it as much as they could, but I imagine an AFL men's player would, be blasted everywhere.
I think it would be the headline story on the nightly news.
Yeah, for a long time.
For a long time. And
everything they did after that would also then be...
It's under the scrutiny.
Yeah.
It's incredible, isn't it, that we're actually having this conversation. I was about to say it's 2025, but no, it's not. It's 2026. Welcome to 2026, everybody. But you would think that this sport is so popular and still hasn't had that moment.
Yeah. And I think, as you said, it's 2026 and people are so fascinated about who someone's attracted to. I know they kiss, but they are. Yeah. They are. Yeah. At the end of the day, people are fascinated by it and want to have a say.
So back to you, but you're the closest expert that we've had, so that's why I wanted to ask you. Oh, no offence to Chris and Brendan from Gay AFL, who are on tonight at Wednesday night at 9 p.m. You listen to them, they will talk about it as well. What was it like for you to sort of go public as non-binary and then with the top surgery as well?
Yeah, so my decision with coming out as non-binary, I had come out at my other workplace. I was a teacher and I was really felt safe and supported. We have lots of queer and gender diverse staff and students. And so I was met with such love and they wrapped me in their arms, and similar with people in my private life. So I guess my decision was around then, well, what would this mean for other people and how can I be a role model? And so that was, that was a decision to do the video with Hawthorn publicly. And also it made it easy for me, so I wasn't misgendered as much.
Was that important to you?
Yeah, definitely. Especially as the game grows more and more, I thought it was an important conversation to have to protect myself, but then also to be a role model for other people.
Yeah. Is it important for you to be a role model as well?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. I think that... I have a position of privilege in having a platform and being able to use my voice, but also a position of privilege in the fact that I'm well supported by my friends, families, partner, workplaces. So I think that because I'm comfortable in who I am and supported in that, it's important to be able to be a role model for people that don't have that same experience and the same luxuries.
Is that something you've ever taken for granted? You sound like you're surrounded by really good people.
Yeah, I am. I'm really lucky to be. I think the one time was when I had top surgery. So I had it in January and didn't come out for probably 7 months. And I think that was something that I wanted to keep private and wanted to keep really personal. And it took me a long time to tell my siblings and my extended family. So that's another reason I kept it private. It was very, I guess, an intimate circle around me knew. That was a time that I was apprehensive about, I guess, using my status within the community to be a role model. But I remember I spoke to my partner and they just said, this could change people's lives, having you be vocal about it. So, I had no other choice.
And you're a pioneer, whether you, I guess, wanted to be or not at AFLW, aren't you?
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
No one else, has anyone else had it?
Not a current player publicly.
Not a current player, yeah.
Yeah.
That so, we're aware of.
Yeah, so yep. there's been yep. some previous players, and I actually spoke to El Chaston around that and their recovery process. So they actually helped me out a lot. But, yeah, they don't currently play.
Now, one of the things my boys and I, who are in the studio, Owen and Aiden are here, we watch AFLW. We keep commenting on how hard a game it is.
Mm.
Like the tackles, the bumps, the pressure ball, everything like that. Were you concerned about recovery or?
Yeah, a little bit. I'm very like anal about my training, and I haven't missed a session in all of my career in terms of like in season or off season. So I always make sure I like, you know, do everything to the T. So I was concerned about that in terms of just like losing fitness.
Yeah.
But I got my surgery with Andrew Ives, and he was pretty blasé. He's like, yeah, you got to recover, have your 8 weeks off, and then like you'll be fine. So I guess he kind of reassured me. And then I worked really closely with High Performance at Hawthorn, and they were incredible. The physios, doctors, and then the strength and conditioning and high performance manager were incredible in making sure I had a program that, yeah, I guess you get back into running, into strength training, and then it's like reintroducing contact. And I was lucky enough to be able to do that all in the off season. So by the start of preseason, I was ready to go.
Can you remember the first game that you ran out?
Yeah.
That season, what did that feel like?
It just felt like, I guess, I was like at home in my body, and I just felt really comfortable. And I'd previously played, I would never recommend this, I played in a binder, so a really tight compression garment on my chest.
Yeah.
And it can restrict your breathing. So, I mean, it was easy to play and breathe, but also I just felt way more comfortable, and I felt like the jumper fitted better, and I just, just felt so comfortable and at home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that... Did you feel like your authentic self at that point?
Yeah, definitely. And I remember someone at Hawthorn, a fan that would come in, her name's Lynn, and she would come in and help prepare meals. And I remember she actually noted that. She's like, you just feel like you're walking taller, and you're like, just seem so much more at ease out on the field, which is really lovely to hear.
Yeah. What would you say to somebody who's considering gender-affirming surgery?
I would say if you have the means and the funds, because it can be quite expensive to do it, I think – get a good network around you that will support you in your decision making and the recovery process. But it is life changing. It's an incredible experience.
Yeah. We are on the Open Table. I'm Craig Brown talking to Tilly Lucas Rod. We're going to take a short break and come back on the Open Table.
Sex, politics, and religion is all laid out on the Open Table on Joy 94.9.
And you are back on the Open Table. Thank you for joining us tonight. I'm Craig Brown. We've got Ethan Kyoto Hall, who's running the show here, and we're talking to the wonderful Tilly Lucas Rod, who was talking to us before the break about gender-affirming top surgery. You were saying that it can be expensive. Mm. Is that a bit of a barrier for people at this stage?
Definitely.
Because... how many, where can you get it done? Are there many places that you can get this done, or is it quite limited?
Yeah, at the moment, from my research, it was quite limited. There, I was wanting to get it done within Victoria, and so there was three surgeons that were like the main, I guess, three guys that do it. And I think there was two at the time, two main ones, and then there's been one more since then, since I've had mine. And it is really expensive, and there's long waiting lists.
I can imagine. Like if you've got three or four people who can do it, it's not like, you know, knee replacement, et cetera, where, you know, you can go public, go private and find it.
Yeah.
Is it – I'm going to ask a bunch of questions now.
Yeah, go for it.
Is it covered by private health insurance?
So part of it is, like the hospital stay and some of the nitty-gritty stuff is, but not entirely. So I think – my out-of-pocket was like, I paid maybe $15,000.
So that's quite a bit of quite a bit of cash.
Yes. And a lot of people that because of it, there's some people that do it cheaper in other states, and so people will go there, but the recovery is really hard. And I get to go back to my surgeon free of charge now, so I like being able to do that. But people also go overseas to try and get it cheaper.
Yeah.
Some people calculate that going overseas and paying for flights, accommodation and surgery over there is cheaper.
I've always... you know, because I hear people do that with dentistry and other sort of procedures, and I just get a bit worried about that because, you know, I often play worst case scenarios with Craig. And what if something goes wrong and you're overseas?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I know, and then you're stuck there. But I think, yeah, that's why, like, gender-affirming surgery is a privilege when it shouldn't be, right? Mm. At the moment, it is a privilege to be able to get it,
yeah.
Which shouldn't be the case.
Have you – you were saying that once you'd got your gender-affirming surgery, you copped a little bit more abuse. Have you – yeah, why do you think that's happening?
I think if people – it's a lack of understanding and education. So a lot of the comments to me were like – well, where are they going to play now in the men's competition? And there's a lot of conversation about hormone therapy and different parts. So I think it was really a lack of understanding of what top surgery is, and that it doesn't mean suddenly my hormones have changed and all these other things.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it is, yeah. And people are scared of the unknown and things that they haven't experienced before. So I think that leads to a lot of, yeah, negative comments.
And being the first at the AFLW means that I guess you bore the brunt of that.
Yes, yes.
And hopefully it paved the way for others
to
come through. How does that feel? I mean,
I don't often think about it, but yeah, it is an incredible thing. And I've had, you know, other current players reach out and ask questions just because they're curious and maybe it's something they want to explore in the future. I'm not sure, but yeah, it is nice to be able to, I guess, be that pioneer in this space because I think it's really important.
Yeah. And we're living in a society now where I know I came out 6 years ago and I had a friend at the time say to me, oh, I bet you're glad you didn't come out 20 years ago because it was much tougher. But I just sort of get the sense we're sort of going backwards a bit.
Yes.
you know, and it's, you know, the orange person in the US isn't helping that.
Mm-hmm.
And we're getting a little bit of response here. Do you think you're getting some of that? Do you think non-binary people get caught up in the whole, I'm going to call it the anti-trans movement conversation?
Definitely. I think that they're grouped in one. And to be fair, it's an umbrella term, transgender, and non-binary does fall under that. And I definitely think that American politics and the conversations over there do affect people here. And I think it is allowing people over here that maybe wouldn't have engaged in sharing their opinions. Now they see what's happening in America and see the anti-trans rhetoric. So they're now doing the same here. And they're like, great, I believe that too. I'm going to jump on that and I'm going to talk about it online. And it is creating a movement where I think at times we are going backwards.
Yeah. How can the rest of the queer community be better allies for everybody in the non-binary and trans community?
I think just using your voice and calling things out. I think all of queer community know what it's like to, you know, be under prejudice and experience discrimination. So just put yourself in someone else's shoes and try and use your voice to call it out when you see it, and be active in promoting the joy that is in the trans community and the successes of trans community, and be really loud in that and celebrating trans people and showing your support.
There's a picture of you just after the surgery of you topless, and you just look so happy.
Yeah.
I've seen it on Insta a few times, and I just think that, for me, when you're talking about the joy of it all, I just keep thinking about that picture of you just beaming.
Yeah, it was. It's such joy. Like, ever since it saw me, like, I spent my first summer shirtless. Like, that was such a joyful experience and had so many nice first moments. Yeah, it's incredible.
Oh, that's great. Like, because there's so many first moments when you come out. So have you sort of done that again?
Definitely. Like, first beach swim, first time. Oh, I went to Brunswick Bars, my local pool, and swam there, like, for the first time. And all those little things that you kind of, I guess, hope to experience one day, but you think there's so many barriers in the way. So to have those nice first experiences was really special.
I mean, we've talked about this. This is intensely personal, but this next question is pretty personal for me and, you know, pretty tough because we booked you to come on late last year when you were a Hawthorn player.
Yes.
Now, not unfortunately, but you could have gone back to Carlton. That would have just that would have been. But what's it like to, because AFLW, you're not purely playing AFLW, are you? No. You just said you're teaching.
Mm-hmm.
So it means when you move a club, you're moving homes.
Yes.
You're moving jobs.
Yeah.
What is that all like?
It's scary. So that was a big thing in this decision because for my whole career I've also been at this one school. So that's all I've known is doing football and then being a teacher or teacher's aide. So it's a really scary experience. I'm not going to teach when I go to Sydney. I'm lucky enough that, and a lot of AFLW players now are lucky enough that they can focus just on football. So I won't be teaching when I'm up there.
That's great.
Which is going to be a nice experience. I'm also 29 and probably should spend some more time recovering and looking after my body. So there's good, there's pros and cons.
So old, 29.
But it is scary. It's like going to, I guess, your first day of school, first day of any job. It's like, where do I fit in socially? Who are my friends going to be? How do I, like, what's the game plan? All of those things that you've got to.
Culture line.
Yeah. And where do I fit into all of that? So it's I've had my first day so far and it went well, which is nice. Yeah.
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 So how do you sort of go about, because you've moved clubs a couple of times.
A few times, yeah.
But that's getting more the norm now, isn't it?
Yeah, it's especially in the AFLW.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Length of contract. Yeah, when we first started, it was a year and there was turnover that was quite high. And that's why I left Carlton. I got delisted. And then.
So that's why I've never liked Carlton.
Yeah, same.
Never.
And then money. I think that, some clubs have more money to give and others don't. And I think that's a big thing for people that want to be professional athletes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's the aim at the end, isn't it?
Yeah.
You love this, but you're also one of the best people in the country at doing it.
Mm.
So you want to get paid. In a way that, it's appropriate.
Yeah, and I think the way that the system in the AFLW works is that it's tiered, so that you can only have certain players on certain amounts, and I think that's affected player movement a lot because people are trying to, as you said, get what they deserve, and they're, moving for this for that.
And it must be hard to juggle some jobs with playing AFLW,
definitely.
I imagine.
Yes.
Like teaching, was that reasonably easy for you, or was it that one that required a lot of juggling?
It was easy just because my club and my job was so accommodating. So my school was amazing and I'd be like, these are the 2 days I can work. And if I gave them short notice that I needed a day off for flights or anything, if we played interstate, they're amazing. But also Hawthorn were incredible. We have something called Captain's Run, which is a day before a game, and it's an hour kick around, and Hawthorn would always let me miss that so I wouldn't have to miss a day of work.
Yeah.
So you can make it work if the two parties are willing to negotiate and come to the table,
But it's so much better now that there's some pay that's getting closer to what it should be.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And you, as I said, you see less players working in season and maybe they work more out of season now.
What would you say to 12-year-old Tilly
now
if you bumped into them about just where you're at?
I think I would say... When we were talking earlier and I was talking about how scared I was of like coming out and all these things that I went through, I think I would probably tell them that, like, take your time to figure out who you are. There's no rush, but also, like, never be scared to accept a part of yourself and to lean into that and explore that. Because I think along my journey, I had a lot of fear about different parts of my identity.
Yeah.
So I'd probably tell my younger self that that's okay and you're going to be fine and take your time and, lean into exploring parts of your identity because it's a really fun experience as well and there's a lot of joy on the other side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love this story because I think – I don't know. Have you seen Heated Rivalry?
Of course.
Of course.
Of course I have. I'm 29. I'm a young person.
Of course. But I think what I love about your story is it's got so much joy in it. And we've been conditioned over the years that coming out stories are really difficult.
Yeah.
And they are.
Yeah.
They can be.
Mm.
But that it's a tragedy. Whereas I think something like Heated Rivalry has just reminded us that queer stories can have, I say this without trying to make a joke, happy endings.
Yeah.
You know, and be enjoyable and life-affirming.
Yes.
And just from talking to you in this last hour or so, it just feels like you've had a lot of joy in your life.
For sure. And I think, we are conditioned that it must be something bad on the other side. And like it hasn't always been easy. As I said, a lot of that, the fear was internal and that in shame and that's conditioned in you, I guess, from a young age because of society's expectations and what normal is in quotations. But once you get through that, as you said, my story's had a lot of joy, a lot of acceptance. And there hasn't been, I've probably lost some people along the way that haven't understood it, but for the majority, it's been pretty amazing.
Yeah. We are about to wrap up. We're going to go to a little break here. You are listening to Tilly Lucas-Rod here on The Open Table with myself, Craig Brown, and Ethan Kyoto Hall, and we'll be back after this.
You're listening to The Open Table with your host, Craig Brown.
Well, we've come to the end of this episode of The Open Table. We've had a great chat with Tilly. Tilly, thank you for coming on. Thank you for being so just yourself and open and honest. It's just been a great conversation to have with you. Thank you.
No, thank you for creating such a safe space. And yeah, it's been great.
I try and create a safe space, don't I, Ethan?
I feel very good.
Thank you. Thank you. That was your cue to jump in just a little bit quicker there. No, it's been great to have you. Next week, we're three shows in next week and we're taking a break.
Yeah, you deserve it.
Yeah, well, thank you. I really do. I've had two different panelists over the last 2 weeks. It's just too much change for me. My work drags me away occasionally as well. So we've got a team retreat or something next week. So I've got to go to that. So we'll have a replay of the the one guest that I was incredibly flustered by, Lucas Wilson. He's from Canada too.
Yeah.
I bet he's watched Heated Rivalry. Yeah. He's probably watched hockey.
Before he played it out in real life.
From the little conversation I've had with you, yes, I believe he probably would have. We're going to finish after us, of course, is Wellness Wednesday, so which is a combination of talk therapy to me and knowing me, knowing you. So that's coming up at just after us. And after us is, after that, is Gay AFL with Chris and Brendan. Please get onto that because they're just nice guys and I like them. But we're going to close with our final song, Girl of Your Dreams by Eli. And we'll be back on the Open Table. Get us wherever you get your podcast from and we'll be back live in a couple of weeks.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.